They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax coming to you from the heart of the Mosaic District in the renovated, gentrified, new part of Fairfax County. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and we have a very special guest today, and we're going to talk to her, but from a hippie who stuck daisies in the barrel of a cop's gun, determined to save the world with love, to founding several recovery centers in Colorado, to becoming a deputy sheriff in Idaho. She went to write a step-by-step how to return sanity in an HOA book. But our guest got my full attention and my whole heart when she said, I want to outlaw all associations. Here's a gal after my own heart, Kelly Marshall. Kelly, welcome and thank you so much for joining us on the Commons today.
I'm so grateful to be with you. I've admired your work for a long time, Sue.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that we have people out there who are listening, and it's interesting. I keep getting more and more comments and contacts from people saying, help, you know, I'm in a bad situation. But you wrote the book. You wrote the step-by-step-by-step how to do it. But there was a huge learning curve for you. You had to learn what you were dealing with, why you were dealing with it, and how to take care of it. So I want you to take us through that a little bit, if you will. Your book is called The HOA Warrior, right?
That's correct.
Tell us about it. Why did you do
that? Writing for the property owner.
Why did you write the book?
Well, I ended up in an HOA, Property Owners Association, and I had not understood exactly what it meant. Before I bought the property, I read all the documents. I read the bylaws. I read the deed restrictions. And I thought, I can live with this. This is okay. This is all right. I understand what these people are trying to do, and this makes sense to me. And so I bought the property. And then once I got into the association, I discovered that the people on the board were not following the documents that I had agreed to live under. And that's what started the whole process.
What were they doing?
The board that we had, how it got started was they had a annual meeting where we were supposed to elect our board members. And what happened was they had hired a property manager, and they hadn't asked the members or anything. They hired a property manager who lived in Salt Lake City, which was 70 miles from our association. And they doubled the dues without asking the members. They just said, this is the budget, this is what it is, and you have to pay it because you elected us. And the new president that we had just elected stood in front of everybody who were complaining at this annual members meeting, and he told everyone, shut up. We don't have to explain every little thing to you people. And once he told us to shut up and that he didn't have to explain anything to us, my hackles went up on the back of my neck, and I knew, no, this isn't going to stand. This isn't going to work for me.
And the whole idea that the industry, the HOA industry, will have us believe about HOAs is that this gives you the opportunity to control your own neighborhood, that it's democracy up close and personal, but being told to sit down and shut up and you don't need to know what's going on, it doesn't quite square with the message that they're sending out, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And this particular board of people had decided that they needed to make decisions for everybody in the association and that the association members could not vote on those decisions because they figured they were smarter than the people that were in the association and we were just going to have to live with what they decided for us. It was a shock to everybody because the association that we were in was meant for the blue-collar worker. It was low cost. You could buy 5 acres for $15,000. People from the city or working in factories or whatever could have their own little piece of heaven out in the mountains. And it was designed to be low cost and kept that way. But this new board, these members that came in, decided they wanted it to be more like Park City. They wanted restrictions, how your house can look. They didn't want double-wide trailers anymore. And there were double-wide trailers and single-wide trailers there for 20 years. But suddenly this new board wanted to upgrade everything. And it became a real problem for the people that were living there on fixed incomes, retirees, people that were disabled. And so we organized.
So you didn't agree to what was going on. I mean, the industry will tell you, but you agreed to this. Didn't you sign a contract? What you're telling me is you never agreed to any of this.
No, we didn't, because if they had followed the documents, if they had followed the bylaws as we have them, it would not have been a problem. Because I will go along. If people vote on something and if they really want it in an association, I'll say, okay, you know, we followed the documents, we've done it by procedure, and even though I don't like it, I did agree to this. But that's not what happened. What happened was they were forming their own rules that were not following the documents that we had agreed to when we signed into this association. They were changing things. And they were doing it without asking the members. No vote. Not letting us vote on anything. In fact, they began canceling our meetings when we were going to the meetings to complain or ask for changes or say that we wanted to vote on something that they were doing. They just said no and canceled our member meetings. And then they started having board meetings and not telling us where and when they were so that we couldn't go and complain.
Ah, the secret board meetings, huh? Is there anything in Colorado law that prohibits them from doing that? Because I think most laws that I have seen require associations to have open meetings and to notify the members. They're very restricted on what they can do behind closed doors.
Shu, that goes state by state.
Right.
And in Utah, where this association is, the main laws that had jurisdiction over us were corporate laws, because we had nonprofit corporation laws. And in the corporation laws, they are pretty clear about notice to the members when they're having meetings, you know, how many days that you have to give notice, at what time that the members have to be able to come. But the trustees were not reading the corporation laws. They were just doing what they wanted to do with the excuse that, well, we're only volunteers. We're only volunteers. We're just doing the best we can.
Oh, the ubiquitous, we're volunteers. You can't hold us to anything, right?
Absolutely. And actually, the law agrees that they cannot be held to anything unless they're doing it maliciously.
Yeah.
So it put us in a real bind.
So they started holding secret meetings, canceling the member meetings, keeping the members out of the loop, not allowing the members to participate in any of the changes or the decisions They're just
That's
being
correct.
Told what to do. Now, if you live in a trailer and you're told to upgrade, that's a considerable expense.
Oh, there were, it was coming to the point where people were going to start losing their lands and their properties. A new set of rules came out that could go up to $400 per month if you didn't comply, you know, within 7 days. And then they kept adding on fees and penalties and fees. And this all came from this new manager that they hired that they didn't have permission to hire. He told them all these rules to put in. And so these rules were put in place. It was sent out to all the members. And I went to one of the trustees who was a neighbor of mine. And I said, do you realize that if some of our members don't comply with these, if they're sent notice, that it can be up to $400 per month in fines and penalties? He says, oh, no, that's not true. I said, you voted on it. Yes, it is true. Read what you voted on. He didn't believe me, and he was a trustee who voted for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens. That happens all the time. When we went to one of our legislators and said, you voted to give associations the power to fine people and then to foreclose non-judicially to collect that fine. She said, oh, no, we never did that. And she asked...
They don't know. That's correct.
They don't understand. What happens is all of this stuff comes in piecemeal. You know, the industry lobbyists will come in and they'll say, we need this, or the homeowners want this. And so the legislators will vote for it. And then it ties it into another part of the law. And so over the years, they sort of crisscross the network and tie things in, and it's so complex and convoluted that trying to understand what you've done is impossible. So they don't understand what they're doing. They really don't know.
They don't know, and you're subject to contract law, you're subject to corporation law, you're subject to consumer collection laws, you're subject to the HOA laws. I mean, it's incredible how many laws apply and how many laws conflict with each other. And I found this out when I was doing research for our attorney, when we finally had to hire an attorney to enforce our rights. And the attorney didn't have time to research all the laws. That's why we did it as an organized group, because you can't be expected to know as many things that govern just one simple little association.
No, no, you can't. And the thing is, you get a handful of homeowners who then make it their careers, like you, to go and understand and read and figure it out and then just follow the trails. And when you realize what you have and you try to explain it to people, they go, oh, no, you must be misinformed.
Yes, they don't understand. In fact, one of the people who were writing association law for the state of Utah, he was an attorney, and I got in touch with him after he passed one law that said that boards are allowed to incorporate without telling their members. And I said, what are you doing? The boards are allowed to incorporate and not even tell their members that they're doing it. And he says, oh, yeah, it's for the protection of the association. I said, that's what happened to us. And in the incorporation, they changed our voting rights. I said, why would you allow this to happen? And he says, oh, no, most boards are really good. You can't make laws for every little circumstance that comes up. And I was shocked. And he would not listen to me. So then you want to go in and you want to start changing the laws, and that's when it takes over your life.
So you've done that as well, right?
No, I haven't. It's so expensive, and you have to go to every single committee meeting. I've written letters to the legislators. I've asked them why they voted for such a thing that took away member rights. And I pointed out to them that in the corporation law, you're not allowed to be inducted into a corporation without your permission.
I kind of like that. When I read it in your book, I thought, wait a minute. You can't be made a member of something without your permission, you know.
Exactly. Duh. But they passed a law afterwards, after this all happened to us, that they can induct you without your permission. into a corporation. And what they do is they take that law and they say, if this conflicts with any other law, this law stands. So you're trapped.
Okay. I'm not an attorney, but from what I've been told, the government cannot interfere with the contract. They cannot come in and add anything to the contract. They can take away stuff. For instance, racial discrimination is against the law. So if your governing documents say you may not sell to African Americans, American Indians, blue-eyed blondes, you know, that is illegal. So they can take that out of the contract. But they cannot say, for instance, you have to sell to people who have been married for 12 years and 9 months, at least. they cannot, I mean, look, let's face it, Shelley, a lot of the laws are that stupid.
<That's true.
laughs> So, but they cannot come in and do that because that's interfering with contract.
Right.
So telling you that taking away your rights, they can't do that.
Well, they're certainly trying.
Yeah, but I mean, the legislature can't do that.
And yet they do. They push through these laws. The legislatures don't read them. You just have a group like the CAI who is pushing for vendor rights so that the managers and accountants and the lawyers that serve HOAs will get their money. And if they can give the power to the board and not to the members, then the board can make those decisions, and all they have to do is get in tight with the board, and then they can get the contracts, for the accounting and their managers, and they can keep this whole thing going, where the members are sitting back and saying, wow, what happened? How come we have all these expenses?
Yeah. Yeah. So how long have you been doing this? When did you get started?
It was 2007 when all of this began. And I was, I naively went into it thinking, you know what, we'll just explain things to the board. We'll go according to the documents. We'll form a group. We'll represent ourselves to the board. We'll say, listen, we don't like this. We're the ones paying the bills. Let's make some changes together. And at first, the board said, oh, that's wonderful. You're being a liaison. That's great. Work with our manager. And so the manager came up to my house and said, look, I know a lot of people are against me for coming in from Salt Lake City, and I know I live a long way, but I believe in property rights, and if you guys want to change the bylaws for your rights, I will help you do it. And so introduce me to your neighbors and ask them to give me a chance. And I did, very naively. I brought him around. I introduced this manager to people. I said, you know, he wants to help us. He's going to help us rewrite the bylaws. And then what happened before the next member meeting, he had the board hire an attorney who wrote a letter to all of us saying that we could not change the bylaws, and even if we did, the board would still have all the power and everything that they were doing was okay. And the manager absolutely betrayed the members when he did that. And it was after that point that I realized that the battle was a whole lot larger than just representing ourselves to the board and trying to get them to be reasonable.
The manager, is he a member of the Community Associations Institute?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. And so was the attorney that he got to write us that letter.
Of course. They travel in packs, don't they?
Yes, they do. And he ended up getting the attorney to sue those of us that were working to enforce our rights. And they filed suit against us. We had filed suit against the association when they canceled the member meeting where we were going to vote on a recall with the board and vote on whether we wanted to retain the manager. They canceled the meeting at the last minute. And so we had to file suit because there was no other way to get their attention. And once we filed suit, we filed to vote. That's all we filed for. We wanted a vote. And they filed against us for over $250,000 for the emotional damage that we were causing the board.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not. They sued me and five other people by name and then 100 other John Does, meaning that if anybody else in the association spoke up, they would add their name to the suit.
Plus 100 John Does, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I do remember reading that, actually.
Yeah.
You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and we're talking to Shelley Marshall. Shelley now lives in Arizona, but she owns property in Utah, and that's where she had her HOA awakening. And she wrote a book called The HOA Warrior, and she's got a great website with all kinds of neat information on it. Shelley, give us your website.
It's HOAWarrior.org.
HOAWarrior.
Or .com. Wait a minute. It might be .com. I'm sorry.
Google HOA Warrior, and you will find it. Actually, I will have a link to it on my website.
Wonderful.
So people can go to it. It's an e-book, so you can get it. You can find it right there on the website. You can get all the information you need right there on the website. So how long did this whole thing take? If you started, the awakening was in 2007. So mm-hmm. obviously you did a great job of organizing your neighbors. I thought in the book you talked about getting people. You didn't do this alone.
Oh, absolutely not, and I would not have done it alone. I was actually working for and was empathetic for the people that were in our association that the board was trying to get rid of. And behind our backs, they would call us hillbillies and Okies and, you know, troublemakers. And rebels, I mean, they labeled us anything that they could. Of course, word got back to us. And these people, you know, I knew how to, I had some website skills and some writing skills. And so they voted me to be the liaison with the attorney. But they actually started organizing before I became involved because they were just so shocked about everything that was going on. But there were 225 of us. In that ended up being a party to the suit. In the first couple of months, we raised $5,000
wow.
for the attorney. Yeah, it was amazing the money that poured in. And so when they voted, we never did anything without a meeting and a vote because that's what we were fighting for, and so we were going to follow those principles. And the people that showed up at our meetings, there would be 75, 100 people show up. They never showed up to the board meetings in numbers like that. It was five or six people at the board meetings. But when they started taking away our rights, people went ballistic. And so we had quite a lot of support.
How many lots in your association, do you know?
Yes, there's 450 lots, and there's only 50 full-time residents. Most of the lots are empty. There's about 375 empty lots.
Empty lots meaning they haven't been sold or the owners don't live there?
No, the owners don't live there. It's for recreational purposes. They can come up and camp on them or they've bought a 5-acre parcel to leave to their kids. It's a great recreational area and these lots were designed for camping. They weren't really designed for permanent living, but a number of us did build and live there permanently.
So now the board wants you to build permanent housing, right?
No, they don't. No. Well, yeah, for the trailers. In other words, they don't want it changes, and the board, of course, has changed since we had our lawsuit filed. That lawsuit ended up that we got our vote. A judge said everybody is going to vote.
Oh, good.
And, yeah, and so we didn't actually have anything but a hearing, and once we went to the hearing, it was clear that the judge wanted the members heard. And so once that happened, their attorney said, well, we better have the meeting. You know, we better not cancel this meeting. And so we had the meeting, and we won, you know, our election. We were able to reincorporate, do new bylaws that very much protected the owners. And, you know, we were very satisfied with it at first, but, Shu, there's something about people in these small communities who become a president, they get on the board, and suddenly they think that they know what's best for everybody else. And so the new board that we had put into place began doing the exact same things as the last board.
Yeah.
Withholding records, having meetings behind other people's back, board members getting together in isolation, making decisions when they're not supposed to do that except at a board meeting. It was very disappointing.
That seems to be part and parcel of this controlled living situation. The people who get in charge, get on the board, all of a sudden allow the power or the perceived power to go to their heads. They don't view it as a service, that
yes,
they're servant
correct.
Leaders, that they're there to help the association. All of a sudden, there's something big for the first time in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
There's something mm-hmm. big. There's someone. And they
and
just...
it's so difficult to get them to read the rules. We operate under Robert's rules, according to our bylaws.
Shelley, we don't need no stinking rules. We're the board. Who needs stinking rules, right?
They don't read them. They don't know them. They don't understand them.
That's right. They don't.
And so then they make a lot of mistakes. For instance, just recently. Now, we had several good presidents and several bad presidents, and now we have a new president, and he's neutral. I don't know how he's going to turn out. He seems to be pretty good at this point. But there's a board member went in, a letter of complaint was filed. The letter was never read at a board meeting. It was never given to the board to review and decide what to do with. Just one board member got it, told the other members about it, and she went back and did a recount on two elections without board approval. And it's like, why don't you just read the rules and understand it's okay to do a recount if the board agrees for you to do it, but you can't open the ballots by yourself, recount them. The count changed on both elections, and there were no witnesses.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of happy times in the OK Corral, isn't it?
It is, it is. And I don't think that these people mean any harm. I think they mean to do the right thing. But if you're going to do the right thing, you have to do it using the right procedure so that you cannot be impugned or anybody can't think you did something with the votes. It has to be done correctly.
Well, I read through, I have to say that I was really impressed with the amount of work that you did with the book. I sat there and I read it and I took copious notes. I'm reading, I'm going page such and such and I'm writing things down. We probably won't get to any of that stuff, so I'm going to let everybody read it for themselves and figure it out for themselves. And if they have any questions, and we'll have you back to answer them. But I have to say that I was very, very impressed with as much work as you put in and the research you did and the articles and the books and the people that you quoted. It wasn't a stream of consciousness that, you know, that you quite often see in this type of situation where people just feel they're victimized and they just blah, 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 and they just don't stop and you don't have a clue as to what they're talking about other than they've been victimized by an HOA. That's not the case with this book. You've done a really, really good job.
Thank you. My goal was to walk people through it from the least intrusive things to do to absolutely when you have to file a suit against your association. I do not recommend it to anybody. It's so very difficult. And it takes a lot from your life. You have to just, like, give over your life to the association for a while if you decide to sue them. And, you know, it's not worth it in a lot of cases. In some cases, it is. You know, if people are going to start losing their homes, association fees are going to go up unreasonably, if somebody wants to put in a golf course because it's their personal agenda, but that's not what the rest of the members want. For things like that, you need to sue. But if there's any other way to do it besides suing, I've explored all those ways in this manual.
Yeah, you have, and you've walked people through and said, try this and try this, and if all else fails, then go to court. So I appreciate that, because quite often we just jump in both feet first and we haven't done our homework and we don't know what we're doing and we haven't figured things out. But that's clearly not the case. And probably one of the most valuable things in the book is taking people through and making sure that they understand what's going on and they understand what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. And all the things that are influencing the situation and influencing them and what the roadblocks and barriers are likely to be.
Well, I think also it's not, hey, the board member looked at me cross-eyed and therefore I'm going to sue the board. They can't do that. You know, I'm not making this up. I am really and truly not making this up. I've had people contact me and, you know, we've talked and we've gone around and around and around. And what it comes down to is one board member, and they don't want that board member on the board. And if you get rid of that one board member, then everything else is perfectly okay in the world, in HOA world. And that's not the case.
Well, a lot of times members and board members think that the whole board has to agree on everything, but they honestly don't.
No.
They represent different factions of the membership, and it's a good thing to have board members that don't agree and have divergent opinions, because they can discuss them, they can look at all sides of it. If everybody just goes along to get along and votes for everything that the president wants, you don't really have representation for your association and the members.
No, you don't. And I think it's good to air all sides of things and walk. When I was on the board, I used to walk them through it, especially with someone who I didn't agree with. So I would say, okay, so we're going to do whatever it is that they wanted to do, and the desired outcome of that is going to be this. And then when that happens, we're going, and so you walk them through to the end, and they find that they've trapped themselves.
Well, that's a gentle way to do it. But I've found that a lot of board members, when you do that with them and they trap themselves, they come out fighting.
And they go, No, I just praise them. I go, I just don't understand. I did the Columbo on them. I'm not sure I understand. So, Is this what we're doing, or is this, okay, that makes sense. Well, what happens, then what do we do?
Right.
And then they sort of look at you and they go, oh, I see your point. So they came, but, you know, again, it's something that most people are not trained to do. And if
they do get trained,
they're trained by the wrong people who have an ulterior motive for training
them. That's right. Yeah, when the CAI goes in and trains people, they train them to give the board all the power and to take it away from the members. And that's one of my biggest beefs with the CAI, is they have board training. And their board training, I think, is useless, because what it does is create far more problems than it helps solve.
But that's how they make their money.
It is exactly how they make their money.
If there's no problems, they're not going to get those legal fees, are they?
No, that's right. And they're not going to get managers that they hire that live 70 miles away. When they hired that manager, it shocked everybody in the association, because they were paying him $3,000 a month for 400 empty lots and only 50 full-time residents. What do you need a manager for something like that?
And it's a camping ground, right?
And it's a what?
A camping ground. It's a recreational place, yes?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Do you have any amenities?
Actually, we have a common area that has some picnic tables and a little canopy that people can use, and they can play ball. It's a nice little area, but it's, you know, it would be like a Central Park, only there's really not much there. Swing set.
So, okay, so there's not a whole lot to maintain.
Nothing.
No pools, no tennis?
No, just mainly the roads and keeping snow removal in the roads. And so there's not a whole lot. And the roads, you have to have competent people do it. And we need good, solid board members who can see that we have the roads and snow removal done well. And we have some good people in the association who know about roads and snow removal. So that's a good thing.
Well, I know when I was on the board, I had to make a decision whether to mill down the streets and build them up and repave them, which is what the contractor wanted to do, or whether we could just put another layer on top.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about roads, but I was responsible. I had a vote. I was responsible for making the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was when I was on the board when I realized that this just doesn't make sense. I was lucky because I called someone, I called a couple of people from the Virginia Department of Transportation and asked them to come and walk the property with me and educate me. Out of 9 board members, I was the only one who did that. And the interesting thing was there two of them came out, and they're buddies, and they've been friends for a long time. And they said, sure, Shu, we'll come and we'll help you, and we'll look at the thing. And they both came up with opposite viewpoints.
Oh.
So it was sort of flip a coin. I thought I was doing the right point. And the thing is that it's the concept. It's the system that's flawed.
Mm-hmm.
That's expensive. You don't spend money needlessly. That's an expensive endeavor.
It is. In our association, it's difficult because we have half the lots don't get snow removal, although they pay for it in their yearly dues. And a number of us have tried to get them to do tiered assessments, meaning that the people with the lower lots that get the snow removal should pay a little bit more than the people who don't get it. And it's a lawsuit waiting to happen because you're supposed to treat all the members equally, and that's unequal treatment. They're charging more to some members who get less services. So I don't know how that's going to pan out, but of course the people in the lower lots that get the snow removal don't really want to be paying more than people on the other lot, so it becomes a really sticky issue between neighbors.
Why is it that the higher lots don't get it? Too much snow? Can't get to it?
It's very difficult, yeah. Because it's a recreational area, it's on some steep roads that aren't built all that well. We can maintain them in the summer, but getting a snow removal equipment up there in the winter is just, it would cost like 4 or 5 times what it costs just to do the lower portion that's on flat ground.
So nobody lives up at the top year-round?
No, actually, there are some people who live up there year-round.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or they go up, you know, for winter recreation with snowmobiles and, you know, winter camping, which is quite common in our area. But they have to park at the common area and then take a snowmobile up. But then you have board members who don't want others parking in the common area, so then that becomes a problem.
Oh, we're talking to Shelley Marshall. Shelley is the HOA warrior, and she's written a great ebook on her, and her website is hoawarrior.com or .. And if you don't get there, go to .org. And if all else fails, go to my website and you'll find a link to it. I have a couple of questions for you. Because I went through, and as I said, I was really impressed with the amount of work that you did on the research on your book and the information that you had, and I thought you did an absolutely incredible job. On page 16 of your book, you talk about amending the covenants, and the amendment requires a 51% vote.
Yes.
Is that all?
Yes, in our association it does. The covenants were written in 1982, and they actually wrote in there to the process of amendment would require a 52% vote. Now, most associations are on a 60%, two-thirds of the members have to agree. And some associations, 100% of the members have to agree. And so it changes by state and state law, but ours was 51%. And one of the things that was interesting about that is when we were going to talk about changing the amendments, several attorneys, CAI attorneys, said, oh, no, you have to have a 100% vote. You have to have a 75% vote. And we wrote them letters. We said, it says 51% in our covenants. I think that's the law. I think our contract applies. And they didn't want to believe it, but then they had to. Because that's what the documents say. But they sent letters out to members without reading the documents.
Oh, yeah. They you know, it's too much work. They just charge you hundreds of dollars an hour, but they can't believe to read it. Is it a majority of 51%, or is it an affirmative vote of 51%?
It is a majority, 51% of all the members, not of who shows up at a meeting, all the members of the association.
Okay, right. But 51% have to agree, or is it a majority of 51%? To have a quorum, you can say that 51% would be a quorum, and then a majority of 51% would be, it would take a majority of 51%, or is it 51% of all the owners that have to say yes, I want to make
of all the owners. Okay. Of all the owners that have to say yes. Yeah, that's how it works out. And since we never have that many ever respond to anything or come to the meetings, there is no way the covenants will ever change. So, because you cannot get these, they have a little recreational lot up in Utah that they hardly ever go to, and they pay their dues once a year and forget it. They won't answer mail, they won't fill out ballots, they won't attend meetings, they just won't do it. And so it's impossible. We will never get them changed.
Well, I think it should be 100% personally, because it, like you said, when you join and you read the governing documents, and the governing documents said that you get a vote on changing things. Now, if 51% of your members say, yeah, we don't want to do that, we want to change the governing documents, and guess what? We're going to let the board make those decisions for us.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. Yep. Absolutely. So that's why I think that if you're going to go in, you need to have a full 100%. There have been cases, especially out of Florida, where people have bought condominiums, and the condominiums, you know, you're allowed to rent them out. So people have bought them as retirement units, and they've been renting them out. They've owned two or three of them. Then the homeowners came in and they said, oh, we're going to change the governing documents. And guess what? If you own a unit, you have to live in it. Now, if you own five units because you think that this is going to provide you for your retirement, and all of a sudden you can't live in five units, you have to sell them. And
there can be real traps.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But the homeowner said, well, we're grandfathered in because when we bought, the understanding was we could rent them out. And we have been renting them out for years. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said, you also agreed that you could amend the documents. The documents were properly amended. So guess what? You lose, homeowners. So you either have to sell those, live in them, whatever. So I'm a big fan of, you know, if you're going to buy something and you've got a contract, I don't want my neighbor deciding that change the contract, the terms of the contract.
And they sure decide on their own to change the contract. Because ours were recreational properties, we were allowed to have campers on all the properties, and it says that in our governing documents. Then one of the members who overbuilt, you know, he built a really super nice home, big old barn, and decided that he wanted to get rid of the riffraff in the neighborhood, put in for a rule that would say you can only have a camper on your property 2 weeks at a time. Well, people were buying these lots and putting their campers in a shed and leaving it there and then coming up on weekends, especially during the summer. And this guy wanted to change the deed restrictions because he, you know, didn't like seeing RVs on the lots. And he darn near got it into the rules from the board, but we were able to stop it.
You see, that's why I'm no fan of making the changes. I think if you go in and you agree to something, then stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
And don't allow half of your neighbors to make those changes. And quite often, those guys really, really don't know what they're doing. They have an ulterior motive. It's just not the greatest situation in the world.
When we were suing the association and the association was suing us, one of the members did a background check on the president of the association because they felt uneasy with him. And they found out that he was a felon and that he had been prosecuted for white-collar crimes, stealing money from people.
And here he was.
He's on the board in charge of our money.
Yeah.
And when we told other members about this, many of them said, that's not true. He's a wonderful person. That's not true. That can't be true. But what they don't understand about a con person that gets into a position of authority, a con person knows how to tell you what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to get you to trust them and think that they're wonderful. So it was amazing that we even found the information out.
Well, it's always interesting when you're watching the news and they catch a criminal. It may be a serial killer. It may be a con artist. It may be whoever it is. But, you know, you're following this trail of death and destruction all over the state or across state lines. And when they finally apprehend him and the reporters go into the neighborhood and talk to the neighbors, they're all shocked. He did that.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's that. Oh, my God, he sat with my kids. But the thing is that these people have to live someplace. And quite often they get on the board because there are stories, there are articles every day about money that's been embezzled out of HOAs.
Well, we were lucky that we caught this guy in time, that we found out about him. He was the same one that yelled at us to shut up at that first board meeting. And when we did get the information, we were shocked because we had no idea. And then we let people know quietly, you know, this is what we're dealing with, you know, watch out, be careful. And he moved right away.
Oh, he did move.
So he did. He resigned from the board and he moved. He claimed it was for health reasons. And that's fine. Maybe it was for health reasons. But we didn't have to worry about that aspect of it any longer.
Yeah, he didn't want anyone looking over his shoulder. So is there peace and happiness in the HOA now? Is it Grass Valley?
Yeah, Grass Valley. Yes and no. Some people's eyes have been opened. A lot of people have been so disturbed. Once we won and got the new bylaws in and all of that, have people come to power that continue to hold secret meetings and, you know, make decisions not at a board meeting and things like that. They get very, very upset about it, and then they won't have anything to do with the association at all, even though they own property there. They say, I'm not dealing with it anymore. I can't handle it. It brought some neighbors closer together. We realized we were like-minded, and we formed some fantastic friendships. But we still have a number of members who think they know what's best for everybody else, and they just simply won't follow proper procedure. It's such an easy solution to the problems in associations. If you just follow procedure, follow your documents, stop trying to override things on your own, it would make such a huge difference. And I know that a lot of the, there's like two camps. The camp who wants to make it all beautiful and wonderful in a gated community expensive. And then we have the other camp who say, leave us alone. We have our property here. We'll pay our dues. We'll maintain our roads and leave us alone for the rest of it. So I'm in the leave us alone camp. And, but I believe in following the rules. You know, like you, I came in, I read the documents, I could live with that. It's when they deviate from that that I go, that I get crazy. It's like, just read the paperwork.
Don't make these decisions for me. And then they tell you, if you don't like it, you can move, right?
Oh, that's absolutely what they tell you. You vote, and you voted us in. It's the will of the majority. We were voted in. We have one, we have a couple of people that go from house to house right there in the community, and they have them fill out the ballots standing there,
mm-hmm.
and they get a whole stack of them, and it's intimidating. You know, the people don't, they're their neighbors. Okay, yeah, I'll vote for you. And so they do it right in front of them. They hand them the ballots. And then they bring in a whole stack of ballots when maybe that person didn't really want to vote like that, but he just felt pressured to do it. So, and then because there's so many people who don't send in their ballots, the apathy, you know, they're going to lose their rights.
Yeah. We have about 2 minutes left, Kelly, but you end your book by saying, I want to help outlaw all associations. How do you plan on doing that? Because I'm going to join you.
Well, a group of people got in touch with me who are working toward that end. Now, I don't believe it's going to be possible because of the counties involved who get the money from the taxes but don't have to provide the services, as we all know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to be possible. But what they do have is in Alaska, they have road tax areas where they get a representative from a subdivision meets with the county road people, and they decide what they're going to do with the roads for the coming year. And based on that, that particular area with their roads are taxed by the county, and the roads are maintained by the county. It's a wonderful system, and it would be something that could replace it, so the counties don't have to, lose the revenue that they've become accustomed to, you know, by this unfair setup. And so it's a way to go to the counties and say, okay, we don't want the HOAs because of the abuses involved with them and neighbor against neighbor. But we have a solution. We have something else we can offer you that we think will work better and will stop all the lawsuits. In our county alone, when I was there 2 months ago dealing with some issues, I was talking to the county officials. There were 37 lawsuits from HOAs at one single time. 37. It's unconscionable.
37 lawsuits suing the county?
No, not suing the county, suing their HOAs or their HOAs suing them.
Okay.
37 at one time. That's a small little county in the state of Utah. So if there's one in that many in that small little county, how many lawsuits at any given time are going on in the country? If the system worked, that wouldn't be happening. It doesn't work.
You're absolutely right. Shelley, thank you so much. Again, her book is HOA Warrior, and she's got a great website at hoawarrior.com.org. Just put a dot and follow your heart. You'll get there, or check my website. But Shelley, thank you so much for joining us.
Sue, thank you for allowing me to share what's been going on with us. I so much appreciate it.
Well, like I said, I was very impressed with the book, and I was impressed with the research you did, and I was super, super impressed with all the information you had there, and the fact that you really worked very hard to try and keep people out of court and tried to figure out a way to resolve the issues. But sometimes it doesn't work, does it?
No, so lots of times it doesn't work. That's the problem.
Right? Again, thank you so much, Shelley.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.